Good morning. Welcome to the House Committee on Higher Education Innovation and Workforce Development. Everybody had a good Easter. We've got three work sessions and a hearing to take care of today. So we'll start with a work session on House Bill 2525. Victoria.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2525 directs the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to develop standards related to transferability of credits and acceptance of test scores for community colleges and public universities. The proposed Dash 2 amendments direct the HEC to convene a work group to assess information available to students about credits required for baccalaureate degree and feasibility of implementing transfer credit evaluation system. We do have a fiscal statement issued. It's available on OLIS. There is no subsequent referral.
Good. Thank you. And I thought Representative Comp was here briefly.
Aaron Johnson, around.
They're out in the hallway. All right. Thank you, Representative Wisnett. We'll see if we can summon them. Comp, thank you. Dana, if you'd like to come forward as well, we'll relocate the work session inside now, I hope. And we've heard a summary of House Bill 2525 and the amendment. I think we're all looking at the Dash 2 amendments. We appreciate your help in bringing us up to speed on those.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Reed, committee. For the record, my name is Betty Comp. I serve House District 22. And this morning, I'm here to be a support person to my good friend, Dana Richardson, who has really helped me do the Dash 2s and is very familiar with them. And I would really recommend that I not confuse you in that she just take it over from here, and I'll be here for questions.
Thank you, Representative Comp.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Dana Richardson, Deputy Director for Legislative and Policy Affairs at the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, and we're discussing House Bill 2525, correct? The Dash 2s.
Yes.
So at the Chair's direction, we pulled together a work group that included Representative Comp and Representative Witt, a couple folks from CCWD, a couple folks from the Oregon Community Colleges Association, the OEIB, Lita Colligan, represented the public universities. The students were there, and a few folks from the HEC. So we wanted to do three things with the Dash 2 amendments. We wanted to really build on the existing Student Transfer Bill of Rights. So you see from the bill, it's introduced some of that language that Representative Witt had originally suggested has been retained and added, kind of supplementing and rounding out the existing Student Transfer Bill of Rights. The other couple things that we thought were important at this point were to see what's available for students who want to go online and figure out how their courses are going to transfer. There was some work on a process, a project called Atlas that was really this online portal, this idea if you're a student and you want to figure it out yourself, there's information available to do that. Because of funding issues, that program had to be stopped. So we really need to kind of do an assessment of where we are right now for students to be able to find that information themselves. So you see that in Section 2.1 of the bill. Of the amendment. And then the other thing we thought was really important is to really get our arms around the data that's driving this. A lot of times you talk with individual students and you hear a story, but it's anecdotal. So you can see in the Section 2, Sub 2 of the amendments that we want to develop a research plan to really get our arms around what's the scope, when are credits lost, why are they lost. So that's what the Dash 2s do, and I'm happy to try and answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you. Are there questions? I don't see any. Representative Comp, if the committee decides it wants to move the bill forward, who should carry it?
Well, is this the one with Witt and I both?
Yes.
I would say that Representative Witt was the major writer of the original bill, and I would really recommend that he be the carrier.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay, Representative Johnson.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just apologize for being out in the hallway earlier. The three of us were having a conversation out there about the potential for I guess, focusing this bill a little bit more. I mentioned it on the floor, I think, last week, talking about the Smarter Balance Assessment, but the state of Washington and other states are beginning to think very clearly about and intentionally about how that Smarter Balance Assessment could be used as a college placement tool and also as a way to identify those students as juniors who would need further developmental education as seniors in order to make sure that they're ready for college rigor when they do graduate and so forth. So my question to Representative Comp was, would she be amenable to including a little more intentional wording in here directly about having this group look at the results and look at the outcomes regarding Smarter Balance and see specifically if that could be used going forward as a tool to, again, more as a college placement tool for Oregon.
Representative Johnson, I'm wondering if you are thinking about 2681 rather than 2525.
Oh, I'm on 2681.
You're giving us a preview of your
okay.
comment in the next one.
All right.
I'll think about how we're going to respond.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. That's good. They'll be well prepared for your question when we get to that.
She's got more than one bill up today. Then.
Yes, indeed. Oh, okay. Yes, indeed.
Well, never mind.
No problem. We'll come back to you. Thank you. I was confused initially, like maybe I didn't read the bill closely enough. Okay, so we're on 2525. Representative Gallegos.
Thank you, Chair Reed. I move to adopt the -2 amendments dated April 1st, 2015.
Thank you. Representative Gallegos has moved the -2 amendments dated April 1st, 2015. Discussion, Representative Wisnett.
Thank you. I guess to Dana, Representative Young. Dana, I'm a big supporter of this, and I've been hollering for this for years. But what the last 6 years, we've been having a group that was looking at transferability, right?
Mr. Chair and Vice Chair Wisnett, I mean, when we look at a bill like, when the HEC looks at a bill like this, this is work that the HEC is charged to do moving forward. And yes, there's been efforts, but I think that assessing where things are with transfer is something that will be an ongoing duty of the HEC. And what you see in this bill is really rounding out the charge, I think, to the HEC in this area.
Thank you.
Follow up. Yes, please.
So did they do any reports? Was there any? I know they had meetings and work groups. Did they do anything? Did they publish anything? Did they take any action?
Mr. Chair and Vice Chair Wisnett, I need to go back and double check. I know with regard to kind of the portal, the online accessibility, we did
yes.
kind of probably yeah. lose a little bit of ground.
Yes, ma'am.
But I'll have to go back and confirm what other information has been provided.
I think it's very important, Mr. Chair. I think any time you talk to a student in today's society, mobility, transferability is a key thing in bringing down the cost of education. If you go 2 years and you lose 1 year for transferability the next. And we did. I'm glad we're having this, and I hope it produces some results. I'm very disappointed. I agree with Mrs. Richardson that the transferability unit was great, and that helped a lot of people, but you still have people coming in from other programs, other states, that wish we could do better than this. And I hope this will result in better results. Thank you.
Thanks, Representative Wisdom. Other discussion of the motion? Any objections to the motion on the amendments? Seeing none, the motion carries, and the -2 amendments are adopted. Representative Gallegos.
Chair Reed, I move House Bill 2525 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Gallegos has moved House Bill 2525 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion of that motion? Any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries. House Bill 2525 as amended goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. As per Representative Comp's request, we'll ask Representative Witt to carry. Close the work session on House Bill 2525. Now we'll open the work session on House Bill 2681. Victoria, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2681 directs community colleges to use results from 104 nationally available standardized assessments for purposes of determining course placement of students, declares emergency effective on passage. The proposed -2 amendments replace the original provisions with requirement for Higher Education Coordinating Commission and State Board of Education to oversee work group on community college placement and recommend legislation no later than September 15, 2016. We have a fiscal statement issued. It's available on all lists. There is no subsequent referral.
Thank you. So based on what we had already heard from Representative Johnson, it seems like we're right into the discussion now. So maybe we should go back to you if you want to have any update to your comment or
now we can
take that question.
Keep my comments germane.
No problem.
Yeah, I appreciate what the representatives brought forward. As Victoria mentioned, the original draft did talk about using results of, I think, four different nationally recognized standardized assessments. It's since gone the way of the work group, as happens frequently in our building. But I do think there's merit in putting some specificity in the bill. As I said previously, multiple states are looking at how they can use that standardized assessment as a tool to both identify students that are ready for college rigor, but also identify those students who are not. And I do think that it will be the assessment that we're going to have with us. So I think the sooner we learn how to what the scores mean, what the outcomes mean, how those are related to student progress or the need for further student remedial education, I think would be to our benefit. So I think it would be great in this bill or in a companion bill to have some sort of specificity. But since we have a work group that's being identified here and put together for that related purpose, perhaps a little bit of pointed focus might benefit their work. So those are my thoughts, Mr. Chair. So my question to Representative Compton in the hall, would she be amenable to amending this further, or would she rather see a separate piece of legislation that would have that in it? So that's where
we're at. Comp, would you be willing to share your response, please?
Yes, for the record, good morning, Chair and Committee, Betty Comp, House District 22. What I am more than willing, I like Representative Johnson's suggestion, and we had a moment with Andrea Henderson out there in the hall to see if that would be agreeable with their association, and she said she was hesitant at first, but yet she said, well, my interpretation is if we put it in the bill, they would work with it. I support the idea, particularly because what I would suggest, Chair Reed, is that we hold this over till Wednesday for a work session, and then I can get an amendment with Representative Johnson's suggestion in the bill.
Okay. Either while we're here, that sounds like a plan that the sponsor wants to pursue. So, far be it from me to stand that way. Any questions from that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'm certainly open to hearing your membership thoughts, or if they had any reservations, or yes, their input is important.
Thank you. You took the words out of my mouth. While you're here and while the bill is open, I wanted to ask you if there are comments or questions. Representative Nierman.
Thanks, Chair Reed. So, Representative Comp, right now there's a bill to not to repeal Common Core, but to send it back to the school districts, and there's a lot of questions about Common Core, and I think that would include like the Smarter Balance assessment there. So I'm kind of worried about putting something into legislation that ties our hands to Smarter Balance assessment. The -2 amendment, as it's written, I think could include Smarter Balance assessment, as you know, it could come to that as a conclusion. But maybe we're better off not to hitch our wagon to Common Core. Do you want to just comment on that?
Chair Reed and Representative Nierman, I think we could list it in the amendment as an option, not a requirement by any means.
I'd be happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
Other comments, Representative Hayden?
Just to kind of follow up on that, I get concerned with standardized testing, even if there's three or four options that try and apply to all students. We have definitely varying degrees of students out there from disabilities on. And I think sometimes when we make these set in stone, they don't give the flexibility. So I'm looking forward to the amendment, and maybe that will cover some of my concerns.
Thank you. Comments, questions? Okay, I think we understand where you're headed, and let's put on the record that we're going to carry the bill over till Wednesday. Is that sufficient notice? Very good. Okay, and we'll close the work session then on House Bill 2681.
And thank you in the committee.
Thank you. Thank you. That brings us to our CTE module for the day. Before I open the work session on 26-23, I want to make clear that we're carrying 26-24 over to Wednesday as well. There's some additional work on the fiscal analysis there, so we'll see that one on Wednesday as well. With that, open the work session on House Bill 26-23.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 26-23 directs the Department of Education to administer a pilot program to increase students' exposure and access to career and technical education, sunsets the pilot program on January 2, 2018, appropriates monies from general fund to Department of Education for purpose of pilot program, declares an emergency is effective on passage. The proposed Dash 1 amendments add community college, apprenticeship, and on-the-job training programs to high schools for development of procedure for approving full or partial college credit equivalencies for CTE courses. Fiscal statement has been issued and is available on OLIS. The measure has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Reardon, this is your bill. Would you like to explain?
Did you want me down front? Or I don't have a lot to say. But
I'm fine with you staying there if you are.
If you, I'm just double-checking here real quick. There is a dash, too, but to be honest, it was mostly a rewrite to make the bill read better and just more clear. And the intent was still the same. Try to give, you know, create it, make it easier for people that have been working in industry to get into teaching. So that involves some better communications tools. The fiscal on it is to pay for some pilot programs at up to four universities to create what I like to call a boot camp approach to allow these folks to get in, get there, and learn how to be teachers. They have the technical skills, but learn how to be teachers, do that quickly so they have those skills going into the teaching. Right now they could take up to 3 years to get those credits and learn some of those things. And that can be a really long 3 years. So if you have questions, I'd be happy to chat about it, but I don't, hopefully it's nothing too confusing or rash.
Amendment at the moment. Representative Rudd, I'm sorry, I was just trying to understand. Did you say dash ones or dash twos?
I have a dash two.
Dash ones on
all. Oh, I'm sorry. I may be looking. I'm sorry. Looking at the wrong bill. Must be my computer, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Probably
need to start at 8:30.
I went to the Johnson School.
Yes, right.
Oh my, it is Monday. Isn't it?
So I think we're thinking about dash ones for 26-23.
Let's go with that.
Okay. And so that my read of it is consistent with your description of that being less a substantive change and more a clarification change. One thing I did note from the dash ones and the original bill is in section four, the amount remains a blank. Is that consistent with your expectations?
Yes.
Okay.
But we have an estimate, $1 million? About $1.1 million, my memory served me well.
We're getting a correction in the,
so
in the back.
Max, if you read
would someone like to come forward and be on the record?
If you read the bill, it talks at a maximum of $250,000 per institution.
Isn't that the other
And there's four possible institutions. So.
Isn't that 24, though?
Do you want some help?
Yes, please. Okay. Yes, please. And if you could start by introducing yourself, we'd appreciate that, too.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, I'm Laura Roach, and I'm with the Department of Education and work with career and technical education. And this bill came forward from our advocates in the field along with Representative Reardon. It is a bill to allow students to earn academic credit through career and technical education instruction. And originally it was requested that it would be a mandate to all schools. Actually, we have some policy in place that allows it to happen, but what we don't have, as we do in Washington, as many people refer to Washington, is a framework from which to work.
Excuse me.
Is it Representative Reardon?
I think you're talking 26-23, I believe.
Isn't that what
that's what we have open.
That's what he has open.
I'm sorry.
Still Monday.
Is it? I heard 26-24. 24.
No, I started by saying that 26-24 is being carried over till Wednesday because we need more. There's more work we're waiting on for the fiscal. That's I was
I'm
about
sorry,
to say
I did
to
not,
you.
I did not hear that part.
Okay, no
it's,
problem.
See, it's the hearing.
Okay, we're talking 26-23.
26-23.
Yes, and the dash one amendments on 26-23. Correct.
Because we do not have in place a framework and we were referencing the work of Washington, we did a total fiscal impact of about $121,000. And that would give us three schools that could pilot this program, as well as use the contractor that had built the frameworks for Washington or someone like that to build the frameworks in which we would look at the courses and the standards in the courses, and we would have some level of consistency from which the pilot programs would work. Does that make sense to you? So the total fiscal impact for that, I believe, was $121,000.
That's fine, thank you. I just wanted to make sure that we were tracking the amendment correctly, and the amount line remains blank. It's headed to Ways and Means, so that's
right.
Fine. But I just wanted to make sure that's what everybody intended.
Is anything else? Any other questions?
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Laura, for being here. Could you discuss that framework a little bit more as it exists in Washington? You talked about recognizing course equivalency or whatever, but could you get into licensure requirements and so forth as well?
Not in this particular bill.
Right. Okay.
But my understanding is that in Washington they have developed frameworks around each of the courses and looking at the standards, for example, the Common Core, the science standards, and saying these are the standards that are most likely to exist in these courses, and that as you teach them, this is our expectation of what could be taught, and this would give you the possibility of giving academic credit.
Okay.
And so if you look at the different career areas we have, from healthcare to engineering to even early childhood education or health sciences, each of those courses would be different, and the frameworks from which you're working would be different because of the content. So you're looking at the content of healthcare and the standards in science that would match. That would allow you to then receive academic credit.
Thank you.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Either the good representative or are you? We say we're going to select the schools that represent a demographic diversity.
Correct.
We normally in pilot projects pick a small school, middle school, because that's what makes up the state. Why is this not a change in how we select pilot projects?
Our intent behind that, to be honest, was to use a small and a middle and a large school and to use it across the state. So that's the intent behind it. We just had not declared that specifically.
But to clarify, Mr. Chair, thank you. So to clarify, the intent of the bill is to use our normal procedure, large school, middle school, and small school.
That's correct, Representative.
Thank you.
Wisnett.
Thank you.
Any comments, questions? Okay, so we have the dash one amendments, House Bill 2623. Representative Gallegos.
Chair Reed, I move to adopt the dash one amendments for House Bill 2623-1, dated March 9th. 2015.
Thank you. Representative Gallegos has moved the dash one amendments to House Bill 2623, dated March 9th, 2015. Is there any discussion of the motion? Any objections to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries. The dash one amendments are adopted. Representative Gallegos.
Chair Reed, I move House Bill 2623 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Thank you. Representative Gallegos has moved House Bill 2623 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion of that motion? Any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries. House Bill 2623 heads to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you very much. We appreciate your help. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 2623. That takes us to a public hearing on House Bill 3371. Victoria.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 3371 prohibits retaliation against student of education program who makes a good faith report regarding possible violation of state or federal law, rule, or regulation, creates private right of action, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage.
Thank you. And this is Representative Buckley's bill. We have Robert Unger and Eric Knoll who are here. You can please come forward. Gentlemen, who'd like to start?
I'll start. Chair Reed, members of the committee, my name is Robert Unger. I'm here on behalf of my boss, Representative Paul Holvey, and Representative Peter Buckley, chief sponsor. HB 3371 will provide much-needed protections for Oregon students who make good-faith reports of violations of state and federal law. Under existing employment and discrimination laws, workers who make reports of violations have the ability to vindicate retaliatory measures and correct economic impact. Students in Oregon have none of these protections, especially at a point when they should be considered most vulnerable. We have submitted a letter to OLIS from Matt Momsheimer. He's an employment and labor attorney from Hagelin Kelly. He was one of the people who sort of brought to light this issue. And I think in his letter he'll sort of reiterate that these protections are really rarely needed. The vast majority of educational institutions and technical schools comply with the law handling these problems appropriately. However, if needed, these protections are absolutely critical for students. HB 3371 simply extends protections to students for retaliation under ORS 659. And I want to reiterate that it really HB 3371 will not impose a burden on the vast majority of educational institutions who abide by the law, but it will provide critical protections for student whistleblowers. I urge the committee to support this measure. I'd be happy to field any questions. I also brought along a student to give a personal view on the matter. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Let's hear from Mr. Knoll, and then we may have questions. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Chair Reed, members morning. Of the committee. For the record, my name is Eric Knoll. I serve as the student body president at Portland State University. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 3371. Before I transferred to Portland State University, I spent 3 years at Lynn Benton Community College, where I served in their student government for 2 years. And in total, I've been a member of student government at my respective institution for 4 years. Back in my first year of student government at Lynn Benton Community College, near the end of the term, we found ourselves in a situation as members of our student government where we were challenging decisions made by our student services department on campus, specifically related to membership within our association. At one point in the term, a staff member or two made the decision to remove one of our members of our team from their position. And we didn't believe that was correct. We didn't understand why that was happening, and we were very upset about that. So we began to research rules, regulations, policies on campus and try to understand what had happened and pursue more information, but also challenge the decision because we didn't believe at the end of the day that it was a correct decision. At one point in the process, one of those staff members who made that decision abruptly called me into their office and talked to me about the process. I had been working with our student body president at the time to pursue this and, again, understand what was going on. And in that pursuit, that staff member gained information that I was involved in disagreeing essentially with the decision they had made. They called me into their office and made it very clear, not in plain language, but through insinuation that if I continued to pursue it, I would no longer have a position in student government. And given the nature of some student government positions, specifically at that institution, but at others, there's a stipend associated with it. I had 12 credits of tuition remission that term. So it was a very impactful position for me, as well as for my career moving forward. So after that meeting, I spoke with my colleagues. I moved around campus trying to gain even more information about what had happened and to understand my options. Word of that came back to that staff member, who later pulled me aside and said that he believed I had engaged in slanderous behavior toward him because I had told my colleagues, my peers, and other staff members that I felt I had my job threatened by him. After that, he informed me that he had filed a complaint against me with our HR department, and that if I did not publicly apologize to him in front of my colleagues and other members, that he would pursue that and pursue full legal action. This was very, very bothersome. At that point, I didn't know what I could do. And given the fact that I didn't have any sort of legal protection against any sort of retaliation for my pursuit and my colleagues' pursuit of potential violations made on behalf of that department toward my peers and my colleagues, I ended up just apologizing to him. And it was very uncomfortable, and I don't ever want to have to do that again. I should have at that point, I should have left student government. I should have not been involved in student activities anymore. I shouldn't have pursued the next 3 years of what I did. But I continued, and it's a story that I continue to remember and continues to bother me. But one thing I want to note in regard to the bill that we're having a public hearing on is that it's difficult for students to navigate reporting processes. One thing that we've learned as members of student government is that we have a lot of students who come to our office and seek that out as a resource when they believe something is wrong or they want some sort of corrective action. And we've learned from that students do have a difficulty navigating reporting processes, conduct processes, or any other legal processes on campus. And it's even more difficult for them to keep that confidential or to keep that information from getting back to a certain member of the institution or to a staff or faculty member. And so House Bill 3371 provides a protection for students against any sort of retaliation, whether that be suspension, expulsion, removal from extracurricular activities, threatening or harassment. And based on my experience, I wanted to share that with you. This is something that doesn't occur very often at our institutions, but I do believe this is a good bill. And I thank you all for your time and be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Are there questions for either of these gentlemen? Representative Gallegos.
First of all, I want to thank you for bringing this and thank you for your service, your willingness to actually serve on behalf of other students. I think as a former student body president myself, and I should mention that former Representative Tomei was my secretary when I was doing this, so. Although she'll never admit that. But I would say that I do have a question about your bill. The language, good faith, is there I'm not a lawyer, so is there a common understanding of that term, or is there, I was looking in the bill for a definition of good faith. What are the parameters of that?
Chair Reeve, Representative Gallegos, I believe that it is a technical term. I'll have to double-check to get back to you. In speaking with Matt Momsheimer, he wanted to make sure that language was in there. So we will, we'll double-check and certainly get back to you.
Okay, thank you.
Not to put you on the spot, Representative Williamson, but any thoughts as I think the only attorney on our...
I don't know that it's called out directly in statute, but I'm sure in this area of law it's been called out in case law. What the balancing test is to prove that you're acting in good faith. Mm-hmm. So it's a question of fact, but I'm sure there are examples in case law that can give that more structure.
We'll look for some more detail too. Great.
But it may be called out in statute in this area of the law, I'm not sure.
Okay.
But it is a legal term of art.
Thank you. Representative Nierman?
Thanks, Chair Reed. And thanks for your presentation. One of the things that I noticed about this is that it implicates the HEC to do the rulemaking for this process. But when I look at the list of educational programs in there, it seems like there's a lot of things that are kind of outside the scope of the HEC. So, like, I'm looking at, like, a school district, a public charter school, ESD, private schools, private college or university. There's a whole bunch of things. Not that I think that it's okay for those institutions to retaliate against a student, but just to have the HEC make rules for those seems like a little bit of a scope creep for them.
Chair Reed, Representative Nierman, it's my understanding in the bill that it prescribes the HEC to make those rules specifically for the higher education institutions, but it also prescribes the State Board of Education to engage in rulemaking for the other institutions.
Representative Nierman, I appreciate you pointing it out, Eric. It looks like that might be lines 28 through 30, rules necessary to ensure compliance with subsection 2 of this section in the manner required by ORS. Rules shall address only public education programs and career schools licensed under these ORS ones. So it seems like that may be...
So maybe it's not an issue then.
At least it seems like the HEC responsibility may be confined to those institutions they already interact with. I had two things that occurred to me while reading it. One is just the question about whether the list that the bill creates in terms of what retaliation means, is that complete? Is that the list that is in place elsewhere in statute? How did that list come about?
Chair Reed, I believe that part of the list came from the existing whistleblower protections, I think under ORS 659A, although I believe they did add other LC, I think, added suspension, expulsion, disenrollment, a lot of the education-specific terms. So.
Okay. And you feel good about what's there?
We do. We feel like that encompasses the kind of general width of retaliation measures, although if anyone has any extra additions, I'm sure we'd be more than happy to accommodate that.
I don't, but I'm glad to have that. Representative Hayden?
Don't these, thank you, Terry, don't these institutions covered by the HEC already have something similar to this under their Human Services Department?
Chair Reed, Representative Hayden, I believe that they do under discriminatory practices, so race, religion, sex, disability. I believe they would be covered under those, but not specifically under law for retaliation measures.
So, thank you. So, in effect, we're starting a whistleblower policy for students underneath the HEC. Is that a fair assessment?
Chair Reed, Representative Hayden, I believe I see it more as extending protections under discriminatory practices to these retaliatory measures. But I suppose you could sort of also see it as a whistleblower protection for not only private but and higher institutions, but also public.
So one more follow-up. So then... is the HEC then working with the Human Services Department in these institutions to extend that, or are they doing a separate policy, kind of a separate
Chair Reed, Chair Reed, Representative Hayden, I'll have to double-check and look. I believe they already, under the law, work with the Human Rights Departments to...
Human Resources, are we saying?
Human Resources Department. Okay. Yeah, sorry.
There are a couple of different terms. Yeah. I just want to make sure we're saying the same thing.
Human Resources. I believe they already would, and I think then HEC would be charged with doing rulemaking under these. But I'll certainly have to double-check and let you know.
Thank you. Representative McEwen?
Chair Reed, thank you. Representative Hayden, I piqued my curiosity. When you say human resources, I think of faculty, staff, people who are employees of the institution. So does this take what's already there for employees and extend it to students? In essence, are we just expanding that?
Chair Reed, Representative McEwen, I believe we are just expanding the existing discriminatory protections, although, again, I'll have to double-check with HEC and make sure that is correct.
And we do have Dana here. We may be able to ask her, although she's maybe not as perfectly prepared on this. If you want to give us an indication, we can ask for your guidance at a later time. If you want to have some time to prepare and respond to it, that'd be fine. The other question that occurs to me is the observation that we don't have anyone signed up, and I don't see anyone in the room who's from any of the institutions. How, recognizing that it may be unfair to ask you to put words in their mouth, what has been the character of your conversation with the institutions? How do you assess their reactions to this proposal?
Chair Reed, we had contact with students earlier in the interim and then admittedly sort of dropped off with some of the talks with them. But I would say this is an issue that usually I'd say characterize students as not being aware of until it becomes a problem. I think there was a particular event that happened, and this student was being helped by the attorney, Matt Momsheimer, and he essentially kind of made us realize this was a lot broader issue than what we had sort of realized. I'd be happy to, you know, try to get some more students on the record with
That's helpful. And actually, I was thinking about the institutions themselves as distinct from the students.
Exactly.
The university, how are the institutions feeling about it?
How are they?
Yeah.
Chair Reed, I would have to check with Rep. Pulvey. I'm not entirely sure what his negotiations with them have been. I think the few that he talked to, I think they were thought that it was a good policy.
Okay.
So, but I'll certainly have to.
I'd
come back to that.
Answer.
Yeah.
Other thoughts?
One more, sir.
Representative Wisdom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would be really interested in how other states handle this.
Also a good question.
Okay.
Representative Hayden.
Just to follow up.
Yep.
Thank you, Chair Reed. I just want to make sure that we're not duplicating something here. I just got a feeling, but I'm not an expert in this area, that there probably is a process and maybe there's a little bit of lack of understanding or education of where, you know, when you talk about business and industry, when a person gets employed, they sign these forms that if you have XYZ problem, here's a person that you go to. Maybe students don't have that or have that information brought to them, where we might be able to handle it administratively just under the systems or policies that are in place. But anyway, I would like to hear from the institutions also.
It looks like you have some homework.
Yes.
There's definitely interest on the committee, I think, but I think we'll all benefit from a little more background, a little more of the work that you're already doing. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
There's no one else who has signed up to testify. Am I right?
Yes,
we have the
that's
list.
Correct.
Okay. So is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 3371? I don't see anyone, so I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3371. And we're done early, so hopefully
wow.
You have productive way to make use of a little extra time. We will be here on Wednesday again. We've carried over House Bill 2624 and House Bill 2681 for Wednesday. Anything else to come before the committee?
Thank you.
Thank you. We're adjourned. Thank you. We're adjourned.